what I want to say is that there's no excuse on why you can't learn something that you want to learn or something that you view as is hard. There's YouTube videos, there's Udemy courses, there's mentors on LinkedIn, Twitter, there's Discords, there's blog posts. You have the access. The question is, do you want to put in the work? Do you want to take the time?
Now, this video is sponsored by me. If you're interested in supporting me, you can join my memberships, use the join button below. You can pay a small monthly fee just to support me. Or if you're interested in supporting me on higher tiers, you get access to the David Bomble membership program. I've got three programs on my website. You can get access to a whole bunch of courses for free if you like. If you don't have money but want extra content, you can get that on my website. Or you can join the all-inclusive membership, which gives you access to software such as the Bosun XSIM or NetSIM software. So depending on how long you've been a member for, you'll get free access to XSIM software and NetSIM software from Bosun. Really happy to be partnering with Bosun. We've partnered on a number of projects and they are supporting me by allowing you to get access to their software for free as part of the David Bomble membership. That applies only to the all-inclusive membership program. You can also get access to live training from Kevin Wallace. These come with restrictions, so have a look at the terms and conditions on my website. As an example, you need to be a member for a certain amount of time before you get access to these extra perks. You'll get additional benefits the longer you are a member on my website. My goal is to try and help as many of you as I can. Hopefully you've noticed that my video quality is improving, but that comes at a cost. So I'm hoping to grow the sponsorships on my videos. I'm hoping to grow my memberships so that I can provide more free content and more high quality content to you. Hey everyone, it's David Bomble back with a good friend of mine, Duan. Welcome.
Hey, what's up, David? Thanks for having me on.
It's been a long time since we saw each other, man. It's been way too long.
It's been like, what, 4 years, 3 years?
Is it that long? Wow. Well, I mean, in person, but I mean, we've spoken online and stuff. But yeah, it was great to meet you at Cisco Live. That was in, where was that? Was that in Barcelona, was it?
Yeah, that was in Barcelona. That was a really good time.
It was before the nightmares of Corona and everything else. Or COVID, sorry. I know that, well, I have a lot of respect for you and there's a lot of people that have a lot of respect for you in the community. And I really want to thank you for everything you do for the community. I want to introduce you to my audience, for people who may not know you. Duan, I've got to start with the first question. You grew up with a trust fund, is that right?
Ah, oh, man, you know I come from a rich background.
If only. So tell us, where did you grow up? I know a little bit of your story. I've seen little bits here and there, but could you give us like what happened? So like, where did you grow up? The figures in your life that made a big difference on you. I just want to set scene for, you know, where you came from and where you are today, because I know recently you just joined AWS.
First off, I want to say, you know, thanks for having me on, David. You know, I'm excited to be here because this is like the best time to be in tech, and like the most amazing time. And I want to talk about that. But as far as my background, I'm from Canton, Ohio. And Canton is a old steel mill town. We have Timken Rolling Bearing is from there. That's a large company. I think Debo is actually from there as well. But it's changed a lot from the old manufacturing days.
Yeah.
And I was kind of affected by that change because all while I was growing up, you know, I was thinking, you know what? I'll get a job working in a factory or something, making good money, take care of a family that I hope to have. But it didn't work out like that. You know, once those jobs went away, you know, Y2K happened and technology just kind of took off. Yeah, I didn't have too many options. So I decided to go to the Air Force, which, you know, I was inspired by my uncle. He was always somebody that I looked up to in my life. He was in the Army and I saw how he was able to get out the Army and live a pretty good life. And I figured me going to the military would be a great option for me to be able to advance in life as well.
Yeah, I'm not in the US, so I don't understand like all the details. So maybe you could just explain it for, you know, for the audience. Did I hear right that you grew up in like what do they call it, an inner city area of one of the cities? Yeah, is that right?
Canton, Ohio is a small town. I would say when I was little, it was probably about 80,000 people there, and now it's probably under 50,000. So think about, I don't know what, I'm over 30 now. So in 30 years, it's half the size that it was because of all those jobs left. The people that remain there, you know, they're resilient. But there's also a lot of crime. You know, there's a lot of people trying to figure out how to make it in life. And sometimes those options are in directions that, I don't know, don't lead to a good outcome. And it's unfortunate. You know, I lost a lot of friends growing up because of crime and drugs and things like that. But I was thankful to have a mother and grandmother and uncles that really looked out for me and kind of, you know, nurtured me to go in the right direction. Because if I would have stayed in Canton, there's no telling where I would be.
You know what I mean? I think you kind of alluded to it now. It's single mother, is that right?
Yep. Father, never met my father.
And I mean, how did she manage to provide for you? And I'm not sure the details. Do you have brothers and sisters as well?
No, as a kid, you know, my mom did adopt two sisters.
Okay.
When I was like in a senior in high school. But as a kid, I was the only child. And during that time, my mom was working like two jobs. You know, my grandmother would help out. But there's oftentimes, you know, I open up the refrigerator, it's nothing in there but ketchup and baking soda. You know what I mean? Not saying we were poor, but I mean, we didn't have much. You know what I mean? We didn't have a car. You know, my grandmother helped out a lot. If it wasn't for her, you know, there's no telling how that situation would have turned out. But thankful for her to have a little bit more, she was able to help us out because we didn't always have enough to make it.
Yeah, but I mean, I think a lot of us have come from much better environments or situations, should I say. I mean, that's tough. If you open up the fridge and there's no food, I mean, that's not easy. And the reason I wanted to ask you about this is just to be an inspiration for others who are perhaps in a difficult situation. There's always people have it worse. I mean, what's going on at the moment while we're recording this in Ukraine and stuff. I mean, there's bad stuff happening around the world. People are in very difficult situations. So I don't want to, you know, discount what people are going through. But I mean, your story, and I've heard so many other stories like yours, are a real inspiration, I think, because, you know, you went from that to where you are today. When I met you, you said, I think you've said this online as well, that one of the things that was tough was there was no one that looked like you. Or very few people looked like you. So how did you handle that, and how did you overcome that, and what's your encouragement to others? Because, you know, I'm from South Africa. I live in the UK. My accent is already can be a problem sometimes, even here. And then with the US, you know, I had to learn another version of English. So I mean, I don't think I had anywhere near the challenges that you had and other people have had. But, you know, I just want to put it into the context that people have challenges. And in your situation, how did you overcome that?
I stopped giving myself excuses and I stopped apologizing for being who I am.
Brilliant.
And accepted who I am and just kept going. Because what I realized in life, I think it's just because of the nature of where I grew up, is that if there is no opportunity, you create your opportunity. And so I think indirectly by creating my YouTube channel and just being who I am, helping people and being intentional about the help that I want to give, helped me get to where I am. To anybody else that's out there that's feeling like they're up against the odds of being Black or being a woman in tech, there's so many people that will tell you yes for every person that'll tell you no. If you don't get the job that you're looking for, it probably wasn't the job for you. That's something I had to accept, because there's been times that I really wanted to work at a company, walked in the interview, really didn't feel like I fit in, get the job, and then regret that I'm even in the environment because I don't fit in.
So I love that. You said don't make excuses. Is that right?
Yeah. Don't apologize for being who you are, whether it's Black, being a woman, regardless, be who you are.
So in other words,
that.
Yeah, exactly. So accept who you are and be yourself. Don't try and be someone else. Is that right?
Right.
So was there a time in your life where you made that decision to stop making excuses, or did it just something that happened over time, or was there an event that, you know, made you think, okay, I can't make excuses for who I am and where I come from. I'm going to make the most of who I am, accept who I am, and, you know, do something with that.
Yeah. You know what? I never really let the fact that I'm Black bother me. But the thing that, like, when I got out of the military, I used to always shave my beard, cover up my tattoos, you know, do all of these things so I can fit into a workplace. And then I go into one of those career fairs, I was just casual. This guy, he wanted to have a talk with me about, you know, his company. And we started talking, networking casually. He offered me a position right on the spot. Wow. You know, and I had my beard, I had my tattoos, and that one situation changed everything.
You've proven that you can come from a very difficult situation, single mother, you didn't have food at times, and look at what you've done now. If you were 18 or you're 23, if you could go back and talk to yourself, what would you advise yourself?
First thing I would tell myself at 18 is believe in yourself. The second thing I would tell myself is be true to yourself. The third thing that I would tell myself is go after your dreams and don't let nothing stop you. And don't make no excuses. Don't make any excuses.
That's very powerful. I like that. I mean, do you believe that like certs or degrees are important, or do you just believe like grit, you know, believing in yourself can open the doors in today's world?
No, you need more than that. You need more than just grit. Like you need to be intentional about establishing a plan and establishing goals. Like you can't just have grit, because you can have grit. You got to be focused and intentional about where you want to go. And sometimes where you want to go will make you realize that you need to pivot, and you have to be okay with pivoting, because that happens in life. And then that's where grit comes in. When the direction isn't going where you want to go, you figure it out and you work through it anyway. You know what I mean? That's when grit really applies. But I think being intentional is like extremely important.
I'm going to go back a bit. So you got your CCNA, and that opened up a lot of doors for you. But I'm assuming, you know, that's traditional networking. But I'm assuming it's not just networking. You read that book where, you know, how to influence people. How important was it to, like, make connections online? And how what would you recommend people do? Like, did you use LinkedIn? Did you use Twitter? What did you use to really, you know, help you open doors?
Again, this goes back to this being the best time to be in tech. For me, when I started, I don't think LinkedIn was pretty much established as it is now. It wasn't being used like it is now at the scale it is and the opportunity that you have now. For me, it was more so labbing every day, you know, really understanding the technologies. And then when I would go to the boot camp, my boot camp actually would have career fairs. So I would go and talk to different recruiters. I would get their communication, and then we would establish that relationship over email at that time. Fast forward to when I got on LinkedIn, you know, I just kind of started sharing what I was learning, you know, commenting, encouraging other people, and, you know, building relationships continually with those recruiters and hiring managers, which again, LinkedIn gives you access to whoever you want to work for right now. So, you know, you could reach out directly to a hiring manager or recruiter and ask them, you know, about an opportunity, and kind of maybe just talk to them about the skill set that they're looking for. So you can work on that skill set to build it for yourself. Through those relationships, that really just helped guide me in the right direction to get to, let's say, Cerner, where I worked at, I think in 2019 with you. It took me 10 years to get in Cerner, 10 whole years to get in Cerner. And then finally, when I got in Cerner, it was like, wow, you know, like, wow, I really made it. You know what I mean?
Tell me about this lab every day thing, because not many people, well, some of the audience might not have heard of that. And, you know, I also want to come back to, you mentioned something in the latest book that you read about spending 4 hours a day on something. So could you talk about lab every day and then talk about this 4 hour thing?
So, and Gary Keller talks about the one thing. And in the one thing, he talks about spending 4 hours a day on that one thing. Do you know the saying where it takes 10,000 hours to be an expert or whatever?
Yeah.
Well, with lab every day, this is before I read the one thing, I would go to the lab, let's say working on EIGRP. And I would do this consistently 5 days a week. And then the weekend comes, I take 2 days off. Monday comes, I got to relearn everything I learned those previous 5 days. And so what I realized was, like, you know what? I can't take any days off. If I'm going to get this certification, I got to be consistent, whether it be 4 hours a day, 1 hour a day, or 30 minutes reviewing, I have to do this every day. And so that's where kind of lab every day really formulated into the process of being consistent, putting in the work, you know, not necessarily not taking no days off, but really being focused on accomplishing whatever goal that you have.
So do you study 7 days a week then?
Pretty much. Yeah. Right now. Yeah. I'm learning something brand new. I have no experience with the clouds. So all of this is new to me. So I'm in there every day.
So you must not have kids in the family, is that right?
Four kids. Yeah.
So how do you manage that? Because that is a lot of people give me this feedback. David, I got kids. They need a lot of attention. Give us your tips, Duan. How do you manage that? Like a family, 4 children, and, you know, work plus studying every day. How do you manage that?
Man, I'm blessed, man. You know, my wife, she's a huge part of where I am today, because in 2013, we had my son, which is our third child. At that time, she was working and I wasn't making nowhere near where I was today. Her check from where she was working was basically paying for daycare for the two kids. And I'm like, you know what? I'm working on my CCNA. The house is just chaotic. Everybody's stressed. I'm like, I don't think he should work.
Yeah.
I think he should just take this off and I'll figure out the rest. And so I ended up working two jobs, you know, so we could get caught up and everything, put some money in the bank. I'm working two full-time jobs. I did that for about 4 months. And then once I finished that job, that's when I really decided to buckle down on the CCNA. Got my CCNA in what, 2015? Yeah, about 2015, I got my CCNA. Yeah, it just, everything just kind of started lining up. And she hasn't worked since because we manage our finances. It allows us to have a balance in our home where she focuses on the kids and everything. If she needs some help, I help. But other than that, you know, I'm focusing on the studying because, you know, I got to provide for the family. I got no choice, you know?
No, exactly. But I mean, give us some tips because, you know, people work a job, they come home, they're dead tired and it's hard to study then. So do you wake up early? Give us your routine and, you know, any tools, like is there software, are there books? You know, what helps you, you know, manage this? Because to study 4 hours a day is a big chunk of the day. How on earth do you do that?
The first thing I had to figure out with studying is the most efficient time that I learn.
Yeah.
So for me, it's in the morning. So I'll wake up early in the morning, whether it be at 4:30, 5, 6 o'clock, and then I'll study as much as I can before work. Now I'm blessed to be able to schedule meetings at 9 or whatever, and then I'll study up until that point. And if I can't do that, if I have something going on in the morning, then I may find time throughout my day, put it on my calendar. And if I can't do it during that time, then at night when I get home, I try to get it in at least by 8 o'clock, and then I'll study for at least 2 hours. So that's pretty much how I balance it, you know, between scheduling my kids' events throughout the week. I do all that pre and events. Me and my wife talk about the schedule like in advance for that week. And everything is just pretty much on my calendar. If it's not on my calendar, it's probably not important. And so I'm really focused on, you know, my goals, what I need to learn, what I need to do, and doing that.
So you manage to study 4 hours a day every day. Is that kind of what you're doing?
4 hours. It's not consistent 4 hours. I'm not going to lie about that. But it's at least 30 minutes to an hour on something, learning something new, studying something that I've been working on trying to figure out. It's consistent on that. And before I tell this, I read something that 70% of the people that graduate weren't from, like, can't read. And I was one of those people.
Oh, wow. Okay. You couldn't read when you graduated, is that right? From school?
I could barely read. Like, I would just glance over the things that I understood, but I really had to focus. Like, even today, my reading habits aren't as strong as they should be. I mean, I struggle with it. And so one of the reasons I study so much is because I have to work so hard to understand something. Like, this isn't easy for me. And I don't want anybody to think that it is easy. Yeah. Like, I just understand that, okay, if I do this enough times, it'll start making sense, you know, because I'm a visual learner, but I'm also a kinetic understander. You know what I mean? Like, I can see I can see something and learn it, but I won't understand it until I do it.
I love that. You couldn't read properly when you got out of school, but you're in an industry where you have to read all the time and study all the time. And I mean, you've proven that you can do it. I mean, that's fantastic. What would you say to someone who's struggling, you know, to read or didn't get a great education? What would you say to that person?
Continue learning. Work at it. There's channels on YouTube that will help you with your pronunciation of words. There's books out there that will help you with reading better. And just doing it every day will help you read. If it's a word you don't understand, you can ask Siri, or you could ask Alexa, or my bad, or you could Google it. You know what I mean? There's so many different ways to help you learn. That's why I say we're in the best time ever to be in tech. Because whatever your limitation is, there's some way to help you move forward.
Dawn, I just want to like sidestep slightly. You mentioned a book in one of your very new videos, And you said this book really helped you. So can you talk about that book and talk about any other stuff that, you know, mindset stuff? Because I think when we spoke in the past and stuff I've heard from you, when you was on the help desk, you were like stuck. And a lot of people could be stuck there. And sometimes you need to just change your paradigm or your way of thinking, you know, to realize you can break out of that, if you like, and do a lot more. So long-winded question, but, you know, what books have helped you and you know, what in your mindset changed so that you are where you are today? Because that's quite a, you know, it's a big jump. You were stuck there for, what was it, 7 years?
Six years.
And then you suddenly, like, your career launched.
Yeah, there's like several books that really helped me. If I had to dig deep on the books that helped, I would say How to Win Friends and Influence People. That helped me a lot with relationships and being in business and just how to operate in a customer service environment. You know, you really need to know how to communicate with people, how to be effective in your communication. The second thing book that helped me was The Alchemist.
Yeah.
This is the story of the journey. Like, that really helped me. The other book is The One Thing by Gary Keller. I read that this year because oftentimes in tech, we'll hear about the latest and greatest thing that we need to learn.
Yeah.
We'll have so many distractions and tasks we need to work on, but it's really focused. It's really important to stay on track, to really focus in and hone in on that one thing that you want to be successful in. And for me right now, that's cloud. And specifically the cloud networking that helped me to say, okay, I don't really need to focus on this anymore. I don't really need to focus on this anymore. Let's focus on this, get good at that, and then get a little bit wider on the information that I want to learn.
I mean, I think that's so true. I mean, the problem is like there's so many things like learn this, and eventually you learn nothing because you're totally distracted. I saw you had a book in one of your videos, Deep Work. It's a book that I think is brilliant. So, there it is. Sorry. So Deep Work, did that help you change your mindset about studying and stuff? And so talk around that.
You know what? Before The One Thing, I read Deep Work.
Yeah.
And Deep Work really, really helped me to understand my own internal learning, my own internal focus, my own reason to know that, you know what? Social media, although I want to help people, I'm one person.
Yeah.
And if I can't help myself, how can I help anybody else? And so I had to say, okay, if I'm going to be on social media, it's going to have to be at certain times when I want it and not, you know, with all the distractions around me, filtering those out, you know, or setting up some automated system to point people in the right direction and really focusing on my own time and valuing that and being on track.
So are you like of the way of thinking where you turn off your phone or you put it in another room during that study period? Or, you know, how do you avoid these distractions?
Yeah, my phone is either off or it's in another room.
And then do you study? Some people find it really distracting to study on a computer because, you know, YouTube's right there. You know, everything's just at your fingertips. Do you study with books or do you study online? And do you have applications that, like, lock your computer down? It's if someone's struggling, you know, just to buckle down and study, what, you know, what kind of tips would you give them?
Now, what that's the one thing I used to love about learning network engineering is the fact that I could disconnect from the internet and just turn on my routers and switches and lag, right?
Yeah.
But now everything, pretty much you have to be connected. So I just don't open up the browser to the sites that I know are a distraction. I don't have a Discord. I don't have any type of instant messaging on my computer. So if I'm not on the website, it's not going to contact me.
Yeah, I'm very much the same as you. The Deep Work book crystallized a lot of the way I was thinking is, turn off all distractions. I permanently have my phone on Do Not Disturb. I permanently have Do Not Disturb on my computers. It's frustrating for other people sometimes, especially for my wife. But, you know, when you're studying or when you're working and you want to produce, you have to turn off those distractions. And I'm the same boat as you. I'd highly recommend Deep Work as a book if you're struggling. This whole concept that you must turn things off. And if you want to produce something, you need to, you know, take yourself away. Social media can be great, but I like what you said. You just do it for a period of time. So you schedule your social media type thing. Is that right?
Yes, correct.
But I mean, our social media can be an addiction, can't it? I mean, it's really distracting, that phone. So you literally just turn it off or put it in another room and then focus on what you're doing, yeah?
Yeah, social media is not a distraction for me. I've learned to combat it.
Yeah.
Like when I'm on social media, I'm pouring out the things that I've learned, or I'm pouring out into somebody else. But like, I don't scroll my timeline. I don't watch YouTube videos really. I don't really listen to podcasts. Like, if I'm doing it, it's intentional. You know what I mean? Like, because I understand how easy it is to not only get distracted, but to have to see something that kind of takes your mind in a direction that has you off balance for like hours or a whole day, you know, especially with the things that are going on in the world.
Yeah.
Like, my heart goes out to so many people, and I do my best to help, whether it's by giving money or giving time. But to see things on social media, most times people got to tell me about things in order for me to know about it.
I love that word, you're intentional. So you're very intentional about what you're doing on social media. You're very intentional about what you're trying to do. So what about goal setting? Do you do that kind of thing? How do you like say, okay, this is what I want to do? Because, you know, it's okay to put time aside every day to do something, but you've got to have some kind of plan, I'm assuming.
Yeah. You know, going back to the book, the one thing, I used to be the type of person that creates a list. All right, I got 10 things that I want to do today. And I may do three, I may do one, you know, once the day is done. But I realized that cleaning up my office or sending out emails or something, all that is great. But is it really having the impact that you want? You know what I mean? Because we can create a list and do a whole lot, but it's not achieving that one thing that we really know we want to do. And so now I'm intentional about waking up and ensuring that the one thing that I do today is working towards my one goal or that one thing that I want to accomplish. And right now it's getting up to speed in my current role. So everything that I do, everything that I learn has to be going in that direction. Otherwise it's not important.
So I haven't read the book. So can you give us like a quick, synopsis, if you like, or a quick overview of what it is? From what you're telling me, it's this whole idea that you must choose the one big thing and focus on that. Is that kind of what it's about, yeah?
It's pretty much that. And the one big thing is pretty much accomplishment of small things. All of the little things that you do every day, lab every day, is going to achieve you towards that certification. You know, you may not enjoy learning BGP, but it'll help you in your job role. Yeah. You know, so that one thing that you focus on, everything has to be lined up in that direction in order for you to accomplish that one thing that you want to accomplish.
So in other words, you're focusing like, well, the one thing now is to get as certified as you can or get as much knowledge as you can in the cloud so you can be more valuable in your job. So that's kind of your one thing at the moment. Whereas like a few years ago, your one thing was to get the CCNA. Yeah, is that kind of right?
That's pretty much it, yeah. Because I want to, you know, get to where I want to be in my knowledge so I can give as much value to the community. That's what I want to do.
So, I mean, like, I like this. So, in other words, is social media helping me take me to that goal? If it's not, then I'll put it to the side. Is this book or is this television program helping me get closer to that one thing? If it's not, then I'll put it aside. Is that kind of the way of thinking?
That's the way of thinking.
You've convinced me to buy the book, so I'm going to buy that today. So,
no, I'm not trying to convince you to buy the book.
No. But you know what it is, Duan? It's in life, it's so nice when a friend of yours or someone that you know in the industry or someone that you respect recommends a book. There's been a few books in my life, like Deep Work, when I saw it on your bookshelf, it's like, oh, that's a great book because I read that book. There's been other books that I've read, like The 4-Hour Workweek, that really changed my perspective. And you know, Tim Ferriss had that kind of thing about like focusing on, you know, where you want to go. He took a lot of like other stuff and like kind of crystallized it and put it in a nice format. For me, that was a life-changing book. Deep Work was a great book. So this One Thing book is the next one that I'm going to buy. Because, and like Atomic Habits for me was another one, like getting small habits in life. So like, I like what you said, your goal is not to force yourself to do 10 things, it's just to do one thing. I mean, that's much easier. So you do these small little habits and you ingrain it in yourself. And like what you've said, which kind of like to me is the Atomic Habits thing, is you are in the habit today of every day studying. And when you do that, it becomes easier, doesn't it? Because every day you know that you're going to have to do some work. So let's talk about books. We're getting philosophical, but I want to ask you some other questions. But it's so important because, you know, books can really change your life. Are there any other books like Atomic Habits? You were nodding your head, so you agree that's a good book. Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week, The One Thing, and Deep Work. Are there any other books that you found really, you know, life-changing or beneficial?
So you mentioned Atomic Habits. I read all the books that you mentioned. The Tim Ferriss 4-Hour Work Week with the automating, like your emails and all of that. Like, I love that.
Yeah.
And I think everybody should put automation into their workflows however they can, whether it be automated ticketing systems. Because when I was a network engineer, the first thing that I would do is figure out the process of opening tickets and closing tickets. And then just automate as much as possible.
Yeah.
Creating templates, like you should do that like ASAP if you're not doing that. The other book, Atomic Habits, great book. But I read The Power of the Habit, I think it's called, by Charles Duhigg. And that really helped me understand my subconscious mind on the habits that I do without even knowing it. That's distracting me from where I want to go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so that book was like really helpful and kind of, it was to me more impactful than Atomic Habits, but Atomic Habits is still good. I just, because it went to the subconscious level of habits.
So we've got like, I think we've got 4-5 books now. Are those like your top 5 books that you'd recommend people read? Yeah. Any other books?
The next book is a simple read. It's James Allen, As a Man Thinketh. I read that back in 2015. After I read How to Win Friends and How to Influence People.
And I want to wrap this up, Duan. Like, we spoke about like the one thing. So what's the one thing, the best advice you can give, you would give yourself? I mean, you've given a bunch of things there, but if there was one thing you could say to yourself if you were younger, what would that be?
The one thing that I would tell myself if I was younger, this just can be the mindset that I have now, is financial security. Don't be, and I think it always goes down to not being distracted. You know, because people will tell you what you need to buy. People will tell you what you need to learn. People will tell you what you need to do.
Yeah.
But if you have your own plan, your own goals, your own vision, focus on that and eliminate the distractions.
And that would get you to financial security. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yes. Everybody that I know that are financially secure, they don't buy a lot of things. They don't do a lot of things. They don't move when other people went on the move.
So you drive a Ferrari. Is that right?
Whenever you give me the keys.
I love that. I mean, it's like, you know, focus what's important. And don't, you said it earlier, so I want to talk about financial advice. What's your financial advice? Like you said, you know, don't spend a lot of money. Do you have any tips? You know, what advice would you give to someone to become financially secure?
Live within your means. I mean, that's the first thing. I think a lot of us, you know, and I hate to say it, but education in the Black community isn't just about literacy of books and math, but it's also financial literacy.
Yeah.
They don't teach us, okay, about the outcomes of getting student loans.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's other ways to be successful than going to college. Certifications is one of those avenues. Learning the code is another one. You know, there's so many different ways to get to where you want to go other than being in debt. Sometimes you have to go in debt, but if you're intentional about where you want to go and this is a requirement, I mean, that's what you got to do.
It's funny, you know, I mean, I don't want to get onto the high horse about it, but it's amazing about like the US, how that college debt thing is like a burden around you till you die. You can't get out of it. And I mean, in my personal experience, I remember doing some university courses and it was just a waste of money because that's just for me. And this is not advice for everyone. This is just in my experience. I learned a lot more just by buying a book and like watching courses like online, free stuff or on Udemy or whatever for that specific topic that I was learning. That was Python actually. So I remember I did some university courses to try and I saw this trend where Python was and automation was taking over. And I thought, oh, I'll get a degree at the same time and it'll help me. And man, that was a waste of time. What I found was much better was to, I created the Python for Network Engineers course because I couldn't find something. And I went and did a university course, but they were teaching stuff that was irrelevant to networking. So, I mean, and I just want to say this, you know, for both of us, we're not advising you not to go to university, but think carefully about it, I think is the advice. Is that right?
So I got a couple of viewpoints on this.
Yeah.
If you decide to go to college, be efficient in how you're going to go to college. Get as many grants as you can. You don't have to go to the most expensive college unless, you know, you're trying to be a lawyer and you have a scholarship or something, get scholarships. But a lot of times when it comes to getting in tech,
tech,
there's other ways to get in, like in tech. When I started, there was no Udemy. There was no like online courses. So college was a major option, but now there's other options, you know? So really take into account, okay, what do you want to do in tech? What is the requirements? Could college teach you this? How long does it take? Because if it takes you 4 years, technology could change in 4 years.
Exactly.
Like the way tech is, the speed and the rate that tech's moving, college just isn't always the best option.
I think, you know, it's if you can, if you've got the money to do it, or who's paying? That's the big thing. Who's paying? If mom and dad are paying and they want you to go, then that's okay. But if you have to take out loans and stuff, and that's going to be a weight around your neck for the rest of your life, that's a big decision. I'm very much in that same camp. You know, if you can do it the more cost effective way, like do a Udemy course or just look at YouTube videos, that makes sense. And I think what I love about Udemy, Duan, and about you know, the way the world's going is, you know, $1,000 in the US isn't the same as $1,000 in other parts of the world. In America, you could pay $10 for a coffee. In other parts of the world, that's crazy money. And I love the way that the world has changed now, where education is becoming more accessible to more people. And I agree with you. In tech, depends what you want to do, obviously, but in tech, you don't need to necessarily go and do a fancy degree to do well in tech. And I see that, like, with networking, what opened the doors for me to come to the UK from South Africa was my CCIE. It wasn't my degree. My degree is not even kind of recognized yet at all. So that was great. And, you know, a CCIE or a Cisco Cert is the same around the world. It doesn't matter where you go. Whereas like a degree in South Africa doesn't have the same weight as a degree in Oxford or Cambridge or something. So yeah, that's my personal experience. I found that certs, and just putting work out there, like you did YouTube. It'd be interesting to hear how that helped you. Did putting your work out there and putting your name, your face out there, open doors for you?
Yes, it did. I think the video specifically, CCNA changed my life, just telling my story, you know, resonated with a lot of people. Being on the help desk is a start that most people in tech get. Yeah. You know, they start there and they understand the grind of being on the help desk. You know what I mean? And then advancing off the help desk, it doesn't come easy. You know, once you get in that position, you got to learn that job, and then you got to learn new skills to get above that job, because oftentimes, you know, you're siloed and the skill set that you have only is going to set you up for another help desk job. So you got to figure out how to, you know, advance from there.
The springboard for you was CCNA, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was springboard. CCNA, CCNP, learning Python, getting my associate's degree helped as well. And I got a DevOps Foundations certification to help me understand DevOps.
So you did have a degree, or you did a degree, and that opened some doors as well and got you into some positions. Is that right?
Yeah, I got a $70,000 associate's degree.
And now you're paying for that, the pain of it, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you went back, would you do it again, or would you have skipped that part?
That's tough.
It is, yeah.
That's tough. You know, I got into Cerner. Cerner had a requirement that you can't work for Cerner without a degree, right?
Yeah.
And that was my first, that was a senior network engineer job. And like I said, it took me 10 years to get in there. And without my degree, I wouldn't have got in.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm really glad to see that, like, companies like Google and others are dropping this requirement for a degree, because, this has been hashed around many, many times. And I mean, we're just giving another take on it. But, you know, degree, it's funny. I look at some positions that are advertised, and the first thing they want is like a bachelor's degree in whatever. And I think I don't qualify for that job, even though I've got like how many years of experience. So let's hope the industry changes, because, you know, in certain fields, a degree, you know, might not be necessary. So let's talk a bit more about the journey. You put out a video, and I must mention that you have your own YouTube channel and you're big on social media. Your handle is Lab Every Day. So I'll put all your links below for anyone who wants to follow you. But you made this video, like, how CCNA changed your life. So I want to try and, like, get the details from you. It's changed again recently, but how did CCNA, you know, change things for you?
When I got out to military, you know, you go to the military, if you happen to get a job in tech, which I was a system admin, network admin, I did all that. I figured when I got out, I had a top secret clearance, I would get into a government job or find something good in the private sector. Well, that wasn't the case. I actually struggled for months to find a job. Once I landed the job, I was on the help desk. And so during that time, you know, I really liked it. It was about 2,000 employees in the company. So I had a large role of responsibility. And so during that time, it was great. But as time went on, I wanted more. But I think I went over 100 interviews in that 6-year time span of being told no for jobs, right?
Yeah.
And part of that was because I didn't take my career serious as far as continuing my education, continuing to get certifications, and doing the things that it takes to be successful in tech. I knew I was good at, you know, working with people. I knew I was good at the job that I was doing. But in order to get the job you want, you have to do more. I decided to go to a boot camp. The guy that I was working with, he came in, he had all these certifications, and he was really passionate about tech, and he kind of inspired me to look into it. And so once I looked into that, that's when I realized, you know what? I've always been passionate about networking. I think I want to be a network engineer, and the CCNA is what I want to go after. And so once I got that certification, that's when everything in my life changed. My resume started to get me callbacks, and then I'll go into an interview and actually know what I'm talking about as far as networking. And it really helped me, you know, make that step forward.
Duan, was it the CCNA that, you know, got you to change your mindset about your career? And if so, what was it? I mean, I understand that CCNA opens up a lot of doors for people, but how did you suddenly decide to become or go and do CCNA, and how did it change, you know, your mindset and other things?
Yeah, it was a couple things. When I was in the Air Force, there was a guy named Pat. This was back in 2001. And Pat, he was like the go-to person in our shop. You know, he knew everything. At the time, we were going from Windows NT to Windows 2000, and he was heading that same migration and just really smart. But he ended up getting a CCNA and then getting out of the military. And I was like, wow, one certification, he was able to get an offer from a company that was so impactful that he decided to get out the military. And so that always kind of just stuck in the back of my mind throughout my career. And so fast forward to 2013, I had one of my best friends who was Kaz. He was telling me he was getting out of the military and he had just got his CCNP. And so at that time, I didn't know anybody else Black that had a CCNA, let alone a CCNP.
Yeah.
And so once he, you know, shared his journey with me, that inspired me to believe that I could do it. And so while I was in that boot camp, that's when I really was like, okay, I'm going to get this CCNA. And then through that journey, that process, the focus that it takes to get the CCNA, it kind of shifted my whole outlook on what it takes to be successful in tech.
Tell us about like what you're doing now, because when I met you at Cisco Live, you were like me, very much into networking. I think you had a network job, like a proper, traditional network job. But then you move into like, I think it was DevNet. And tell us about what's happened recently.
It's like a progression. So
yeah.
I think I was on your channel in 2018, and I had got my first network engineer role. Then I seen you in 2019 at Cisco Live, and I had got my first senior network engineer role. And now I'm a senior cloud networking developer advocate at AWS. Yeah, it's been a real progress. And my focus specifically, like I mentioned before, is in cloud networking.
You got to tell me, well, what's that title again, and what does it actually encompass? Because when we were setting this up, you're not like a cloud engineer like I would typically see it, I believe. So can you give us the title again and kind of like what do you do?
So my title specifically is a senior cloud networking developer advocate. What I do is I help engineers and developers and organizations learn and be successful in cloud networking on AWS. Like, it's fun. You think about network engineering, right? And all the pain points that we face as network engineers. I get to help network engineers remove those pain points. Like, for me, that's the best of both worlds, to be able to learn some of the latest technologies and then share with people, talk about it in video formats at different talks and events, and then like come on your podcast and your YouTube channel and talk about tech. Like, I love what I do. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? I mean, it's especially you've got a passion for this stuff. So you've got the title networking and developer. So are you bridging those two sort of domains, if you like?
It's kind of bridging those two. But when you think about where network engineering is going, we're automating a lot more. You know, the infrastructure in the cloud is all APIs. When you think about it, you know, you communicate everything on AWS is pretty much an API talking to another API. We're designing our infrastructures in code. Infrastructure is code. So you're building out a template and you're pushing out with Terraform or CloudFormation to the cloud to build out your infrastructure. So it's really changing. It's evolving. And I love it.
So tell me, I mean, how did you make the move? Or let's step back. If I want to get into doing what you're doing, what would you advise? Like which certs? How does a traditional network engineer become like you? A lot of networking people are, you know, worried that networking is dead. So I get these messages all the time, you know, it's not worth getting a CCNA because networking is dead. You know, what would you say?
I think networking is alive more than ever. Because at the core and the foundation of everything we do, even right now, is the OSI model, layer 7. In order for you to watch this video, you have to get to the application layer. And you as a network engineer, if you don't understand that at the foundation of source destination, the ports that are being communicated on a network, how are you going to move into another position as a cloud engineer or make the pivot to a developer? Because some of the best developers actually understand networking.
Oh, that's interesting. So which, I saw some, you put out some information about which certs did you get or which certs are you working on to help you with this, you know, sort of transition, if you like, from a traditional network engineer to cloud?
For me, it wasn't specifically about the certs. It was more so about the skill set. Yeah. And so what I mean by that is, like I mentioned, getting a strong foundation in networking, understanding TCP, UDP, the OSI model, BGP, DNS, DHCP, all of that. And then building on that skill set to learn, let's say, Python, some coding, and then applying it in the workplace. That's what really helped me. Being a part of some projects and then learning DevOps as well, being a part of a pipeline, managing that pipeline, pushing out code, building out tools, and it got me to where I am today.
I think I agree, you know, it's skills that you need to build, but I like certs just because they give you a roadmap and they sort of like tell you what you don't know, if you like. It kind of like, it's a structured way to learn. So, I mean, I'm assuming like, and I don't want to push you on certs, Duan, but it's like just to get an idea. It's like CCNA gives you foundations. Would you recommend like doing Cisco DevNet Associate or some of the DevNet certs? Would you recommend some AWS certs? And I mean, you work for AWS, so it's fine if we talk about AWS certs because, you know, that's what you're doing. And this is your opinion anyway, so. You know, what, give me a bit of a roadmap or give me a bit of like a, you know, what would you do or recommend based on sort of your experience if I wanted to like, okay, I'm going to start with this, then this, then this, then this.
So I got a lot of certs, right?
Okay, we don't need 100. Give us like a few.
No, I'm going to just preface it on the certs that I have. So I have the CCNA, I have the CCNP. I would have got the CCIE, but... Yep. The journey in the road to get to CCIE requires a whole level of dedication that I really didn't have the time to put in because it takes that. But the CCNP will give you that level of knowledge to really understand networking and really have that foundation. Now, outside of that, learning Linux, I think I have the Linux Plus, and that definitely helped me with where get to where I am because, again, another foundation of the cloud in DevOps and network automation is Linux. You have networking, then you have Linux. You know, you can't do automation pretty much without Linux because you're using Docker containers, you're using Ansible, you're using something that's ran on Linux, right? Backend, you name it, it's ran on Linux. Now, the Linux Plus can help you with that. Next, when we talk about the skill sets that you need, I would say some type of coding language. Now, it could be Ansible, it could be, I would say Terraform, but Terraform is more of a Python code, but the part, once you get past learning networking and Linux, now you need to be able to apply it. So find it somewhere where you can take that and learn Python and see it in action, learn Ansible, see it in action. That's really important. Also, a part of that, we have pipelines. So understanding Git, version control, all of that piece right there when it comes to DevOps and managing pipelines. So this DevNet can help you with that. It does help you with that. But I really think getting that experience is like really important.
Yeah.
Now, when we're talking about getting to that cloud engineer role, Now we're talking those cloud certifications like AWS Cloud Practitioner, which introduces you to the six pillars of well-architected frameworks on AWS, introduces you to the over 200 services on AWS, helps you set up your AWS account, introduces you to VPCs. It gives you that broad overview of what AWS and what the cloud is all about, right?
Yeah.
Because that's important to really understand why of the cloud, the why of networking, the why of coding.
Is that where you'd stop or did you go? I think you're busy with your next cert, aren't you? Because you've done Cloud Practitioner. Now you're doing which cert?
I have the Cloud Practitioner. I got the Solutions Architect. I'm working on the Developer Cert and then I'm moving on to Networking Specialty.
Yeah. So tell me, how long did you take to get the Cloud Practitioner? You've already mentioned on your channel, but for my audience, how long did it take you and what are your tips, you know?
It took me about 6 days to get the Cloud Practitioner.
How long have you been practicing law?
What time is it? It's 12:22 a.m.
About 7 hours.
It's really quick, eh? But is that because of your previous knowledge, or you know, if I just had CCNA, do you reckon you know I could do it in a month?
Oh yeah, you can do it in a month. The cloud practitioner is a lot of understanding AWS, right?
Yeah,
it isn't a lot of application. Now, once you get to the solution architect, now you got to understand how to architect on AWS. So the cloud practitioner is more of a broad understanding of AWS.
So, I mean, it's funny because when I looked at your journey, I mean, we've known each other for a while. I remember you being traditional network engineer and then you started doing Python and like a lot of automation, if I remember right, in your job. And I can't remember which roles you went to, but I just remember specifically, you know, you were doing pure like networking and then it was like suddenly you were doing Python. And then suddenly you're working at Cisco doing a lot of like developer type stuff. And now you're in the cloud. So what I've seen, quite a few people that I know suddenly are working, you know, networking people are suddenly working at AWS. Do you think that there's a future for network engineers, but specifically on the cloud?
Of course. I mentioned before, you have networking in the cloud. Networking hasn't gone away. I mean, you don't have broadcast, you don't have ARP, but you do have networking. You know, you still have BGP, you still have DNS, you still have traditional networking being done in the cloud. It's not going away.
Do you have any advice for someone who's a traditional network engineer? We've given them a lot of advice already, but like if they're concerned about sort of their future in traditional networking, what advice would you give them?
You know, I kind of mentioned some of the skills that you had, but one thing I didn't mention that the DevNet Cert offers is that understanding APIs. That's a huge part of architecting on AWS and just communication as we know it for our services on infrastructure, because you think of your traditional server. And this goes back to my point of this being the best time ever to be in tech, right?
Yeah.
When I started in tech, it was hard as heck to get your hands on a server, some routers, switches. It was impossible.
Yeah.
But now you can log in, set up a free tier account on AWS and get access to an entire infrastructure as large as you want across multiple regions, meaning all across the world. You can spin up a server, spin up an instance, spin up VPCs, connect your VPCs in different regions. You can really lab every day. For my solutions architect, I think it cost me 62 cents.
62 cents.
as far as lag time and as far as cost on AWS for, I think it was setting up Transit Gateway and running my NAT Gateway, it was a total of 62 cents.
That's amazing. I mean, I saw you tweet recently that you gave away or you sold like your last bit of physical equipment. Is that right?
Yeah, I gave it away. I'm not selling it. I want to help. I want to be a blessing. I give it away. I give away my equipment.
That's brilliant. So, I mean, in other words, all you have is like a laptop and then everything else you do in the cloud, yeah?
I do have a desktop. Yeah. I have a laptop. Raspberry Pis, that's another thing. I think Raspberry Pis are important to learn Kubernetes. But other than that, yeah, that's pretty much all I have.
Can you explain Kubernetes to a networking person and why it's important to learn?
Ah, man. So in an environment, right? Let's say in a networking environment, you'll have developers that are building tools or microservices.
Yeah.
And the way they do this through, let's say, Docker, which is, if you think of virtual machines have everything that a virtual machine needs from RAM, CPU, memory, all of this, right? A Docker container actually abstracts all of that and just gives the Docker container only what it needs to run whatever service you want to build. Basically, very small to run on the system. Developers are spinning these up everywhere and they really need a way to manage these. Let's say you have a Docker container that is a microservice for a web page. Well, that web page may need several Docker containers to run, as well as several instances of that same microservice that needs to be load balanced to those microservices, right?
Yeah.
Well, Kubernetes allows you to manage all of those microservices in one platform.
Which technologies did you find the most difficult to understand when you moved from like networking to the cloud? Because like Kubernetes is like a weird thing for perhaps a traditional network engineer. You know, are there any other technologies that you really struggled with? Because I'm going to ask you to explain it to us now.
The hardest thing that I really had to understand.
Or a few of them. I mean, if there's anything like, is there any weird technologies in AWS that you struggled with? Or did your background of like programming and networking just like make it an easy transition?
I'm going to be honest. Like, there's nothing that's hard to understand. It's more the implementation.
Yeah.
That can be in the scale of that implementation and the integration with other services that can be the challenge. And that's been like the biggest challenge, like grasping something, labbing it up practically. But then once you get into an environment to actually implement it, that's been a struggle.
The one we've been going for a long time. Any last thoughts, anything you want to say?
Again, thanks for having me on, David. When I started working on my CCNP, your GNS3 videos, you know, were a huge boost. When I started my Python journey, your Python for Network Engineers course helped me as well. And you as a person, you know, just connecting with you and, you know, supporting me, I really do appreciate it. For everyone that's watching, you know, thank you for viewing. What I want to say is that the way I began this video with this being the best time to be in tech, it really is. Yeah. There's no excuse on why you can't learn something that you want to learn or something that you view as is hard. There's YouTube videos, there's Udemy courses, there's mentors on LinkedIn, Twitter, there's Discords, there's blog posts. Even vendors have free trainings around whatever technology you want to learn. You have the access. The question is, do you want to put in the work? Do you want to take the time that it takes to learn something that's hard? Because it can be challenging. It can be difficult. But the one thing that's for certain is that you can do it. And I believe in you. Let's get to our goals. Let's map it out, have that one plan, and go after it.
That's brilliant. Duan, I really want to thank you for sharing. You know, it's when you start out, it's sometimes difficult. You don't know where to go. And it's just nice to, I love getting, you know, stories from people in different walks of life and showing that it's possible. You know, if you put the work in, if you have the ambition, you can do it. So yeah, I really want to thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me on, David.
Brilliant. Thanks, man.